This episode of the Troxel Podcast is made possible with support from ArcIT. Are you tired of standard IT services that miss the mark? Choose ArcIT for specialized, proactive IT management, BIM support, and robust data security tailored for architects. Whether you're a team of 10 or a growing firm of 50 plus, ArcIT understands the architecture industry and will empower your unique creative vision to enable you to do your best work. Embrace a technology team that enhances, not hinders, your design process. Visit getarcit.com for your free IT assessment and start transforming your firm and your tech experience today. That's getarcit.com. Welcome to the Troxel Podcast. I'm Evan Troxel. In this episode, I welcome Susan Young. Audiences call her mesmerizing and life-changing. Susan is an award-winning communicator and AEC trainer. Her company, Get In Front Communications, has been around now for 24 years, so she brings a wealth of wisdom to our conversation today. Susan coaches leaders how to be engaging so that they can have more trust, clients, and impact. A former on-air radio news reporter for a decade, Susan has interviewed everyone from homeless people to presidents. She has also managed the Office of Radio and TV for New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman. In addition, Susan was a PR director for a statewide nonprofit. Honored as Entrepreneur of the Year, Susan's favorite achievement is being named one of the top 75 badass women on Twitter. She joins me today to discuss effective communication and storytelling in the AEC industry. And I know a lot of people on the tech side will get a lot out of this episode. We cover how to ask good questions, how to get a better understanding of your client's needs beyond what's being presented, creating a narrative around your work, the importance of being relevant, being a solution to your client's problems, standing out in a crowd, and the effective use of technology as it relates to the topic of communication and storytelling. Before we jump into the conversation, please do me a favor. If you are a regular listener and are enjoying these episodes, I ask that you subscribe both on YouTube and in your preferred podcast app to let me know that you're a fan of the show and to automatically get notified when new episodes come out. Being a subscriber directly contributes to my ability to attract great sponsors, which brings value to you while also keeping the lights on here at Troxel HQ, and my ability to attract high-profile guests, which I'm sure you would love to hear from. This is my full-time gig, in case you didn't know that, and you can probably imagine how much effort it takes to create what I'm building here from the ground up. My goal is to deliver a quality resource to provide value to you and the industry as a whole. So if you haven't subscribed, I highly encourage that you do so. It's completely free. You can also support what we're doing here by sharing this episode with your colleagues. Thank you so much. And now, without further ado, I bring you my conversation with Susan Young. Joining me today is Susan Young. Susan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Evan.
I am very happy to have you on the show because this is a little bit different of a topic, but it's something that's very near and dear to me as a self-proclaimed, I guess, communicator. This is just one thing that I've noticed throughout the years of my job is to communicate. And I found that when I was working in a firm as a designer, when I was working with stakeholders and clients on projects, it was like finding the best way to communicate with them, finding the best way to tell a story, finding the best way to connect with them. And I know that this is really what you're all about as well. So I think this is a valuable topic for this audience. A lot of times, architects, people in technology are more, I'll say, I'm just guessing here, fact check me, on the introverted side of the scale. And we tend to go into our tunnel and do our things. We're serious doers, right? And oftentimes there's a disconnection from the other side of that, which is connecting with people, getting the right information, landing in a positive way so that you get the most out of those interactions. Anyway, I've said way too much already. Maybe you can tell us a story about how you've gotten to where you are and what your backstory actually is.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. And I love being here today with you. Everyone's got a story. So here's my story.
All right.
I didn't talk until I was 4 years old. Was born in Brooklyn and my parents thought I was deaf. They took me to the doctor and the doctor said, no, she's absolutely fine. She just doesn't need to talk. They were like, well, what does that mean? You know, they said, well, what does she do when she's hungry? And they said, well, she goes over to the refrigerator and bangs on the door. I didn't need any words. So eventually, of course, I started to talk. And
you were efficient. You were just efficient. This is the thing.
Pretty direct. Yeah. Yeah. And what does a child like this do when you don't talk to your 4 years old? I go off to college and major in mass communication. And
of course,
first week on campus in Connecticut, I found the campus radio station and I was hooked. I was always a strong writer and enjoyed writing. But, I was also very into music. So I DJed and then started doing news and just fell in love with that. And so it was always interesting and curious and changing. It wasn't the same day. That's the Rolling Stones singing Satisfaction, you know, so everything was different, which was exciting to me. I was always curious. Both my sisters got on their report cards, talks too much in class. I got roams around the hallways. I always thought that there was something better than that third grade class, you know, that I was curious. I wanted to find out what was going on. And that insatiable curiosity really helped me to build my career. And so I graduated from college and I went back to New Jersey and worked in radio news as an on-air news reporter and news director and anchor for 10 years, interviewing everyone from homeless people to presidents, asking questions, deep listening, interviewing everyone from, like I say, homeless people to presidents and winning awards along the way. And what I discovered was that all I had to do was ask good questions and be curious. And so that really helped fuel my career and ran Governor Christy Whitman's Office of Radio and Television at the state capitol. Worked for a nonprofit for a year. And then I realized, this is now 2000, that I've sat through hundreds and hundreds of presentations at town hall meetings, at protests and, you know, government meetings, hearings that engineers, architects that were, most were painful, a few were persuasive. And I thought they really need some communication help. Those packed slides and all that information and looking at the shoes and the gestures and inflection and all that. So I opened up my business in 2000. It's called Get in Front Communications, and been working with architects, engineers, and construction pros on how to be more effective at communication, how to become more curious and use those deep listening skills, not to be self-serving, but to be able to be an emotional archaeologist and go in there with an invisible shovel and ask good questions. And so that you're able to notice things that other people don't notice and pay attention in a very different way and have a very subtle level of self-confidence without being arrogant or pushy or anything like that obnoxious. And in the end, it's about being a confident communicator and being proficient in not only being able to build a room, but knowing how to read the room.
I want to go back to that. You just said like some very simple words, but I think they have, there's more here, which is asking good questions. Can you define what that means? Because I think that it's like, we hear that all the time, right? For good communicators, ask good questions. Good interviewers, ask good questions. But if you could put some words to what that actually means to you.
Yeah, I think it's really about when we listen deeply, we ask quality questions to get quality information. So if you're not getting the information that you want from whoever, a vendor, from a client, from a prospect, from your child or a partner, then the onus is on you, not them, so that you ask better questions. So it depends on the flow and the natural evolution of a conversation. And so it really is about paying sharp attention to what people are saying and not planning ahead and being distracted in your mind, because we're all bombarded with so much, messaging and I have to go here, I have to go there. We're not fully present. So when you notice that somebody said something and you're paying attention and you're sharp and you're on the ball, you're able to follow up with a question that's not scripted, that's not in a cookie cutter template, that's not sounding robotic. And so you ask a question, say, that's interesting, because you're curious. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? So one of the questions that I've taught people to, you know, when I do coaching and everything with AEC folks, is you ask the question, what else, what else, what else? What else is going on here? What else is this story about? What else is happening behind the scenes that I don't know about? Mm-hmm. What else can I do to help solve this problem? And so you ask yourself, what else, what else, what else? There's gold here. And I, as an emotional archaeologist with that invisible shovel, come in and no pain, we pull the questions and the information out of people by asking quality questions. And it's easy and it's magical.
I'm sitting here with the pregnant pause because I feel like that's one of those fears that people have in these situations, is to not allow space. And that is one of the reasons why people are always thinking ahead of what's next. Where are we going? What's the next thing that I need to check off my list of things that I prepared for with this meeting, with this presentation, whatever it is, and have to keep it going because we don't want to lose their attention, right? The fear is losing their attention or going down a rabbit hole or getting caught off guard or any of those things, when what you're proposing basically the opposite, which is we're going to go explore together and we don't know where that's going. We have not prepared for that, right? And relying on our expertise to guide what we actually need to get out of this presentation or conversation or whatever it may be. There are some innate fears in these instances that happen, right? So I would love to hear from you, like, what kinds of things have you seen come out of that? Because there's that real fear, but at the same time, you said there's gold there, right? And so how do we overcome those fears to allow those explorations to actually happen?
It's really about trusting yourself and being fully present and in the moment. And one of my first coaches from Philadelphia told me years ago, be fully present. And remember, this is, you know, before social media and all of the bombardment of messages and
mass distraction
that we had,
right?
The noise in the world. Right. Right. She said to me, wherever your feet are, your head is. So right now I'm with you, Evan, in this conversation on this podcast, and I'm not worried or thinking about, oh, I got to mail that, you know, FedEx has to be returned, or, you know, I have to get gas in the car. There's some noise in the other room. I'm here with you right now. That's it. Everything is perfect. And so once we start to drift, and it's really about self-awareness, you catch yourself mentally drifting, and you know when people aren't really paying attention, you can tell. So you notice these things and you start to trust yourself and you tell yourself a different story. Now, I'm a storyteller by trade for 40 years, working in radio, interviewing, you know, thousands of people. And what I realized is that our communication is an inside job. So whatever story you're telling yourself in here, I'm not a good communicator. I'm an empath. I'm an introvert. I'm not a good driver. I don't look good in red. Whatever, you know, whatever that story is, that narrative, that self-doubt, first we have to address that story. Then you can go into the marketplace and feel much more confident and comfortable because you trust yourself. You can't go into a meeting or a presentation or a BD networking event, what have you, if you don't believe you. Because there's two basic laws of marketing, Evan. One, people have to know you exist. And two is they have to believe you. But the third one is where I focus. It's on the believability factor. Do you believe you? Because if you don't believe you, nobody else will.
I feel like a lot of times that's talking points, right? We're regurgitating the thing that we've been preparing to talk about, and it comes across exactly as you just said, which is it comes across with some amount of disbelief. And it's just because, like, I'm saying this because I'm supposed to say this. It's not that I have truly embodied it, that I've really thought through the future implications of what I'm telling you right now. And we're going up in AEC, we're going into a scenario or a relationship that is going to take years, right? It's going to take years. And if I can't connect with you now, and I can't have that connection of belief that you're talking about now, what makes me think that this relationship is going to last years? Because it actually is, right? It needs to. It needs to be something that we can do together for multiple years. And I find that is, I absolutely believe what you're saying, because there have been so many times when your team doesn't get chosen because you don't connect with them, because they're not picking the firm. They're picking the people who are right there in the room, because those are the people they're going to have to work with for the next number of years.
Exactly. Yeah. And when, you know, you can, it's all in the preparation. And when you trust yourself and you're able to have that deeper connection and that rapport, like you say, you know, that you're going to have to work together. How do you click with people? How do you read people? How do you know? You listen. You have those deep listening skills. You ask good questions. You're fully present. You have that trust in your head so that you know you belong there. You know that what differentiates your firm from another. And people pick up on this. And I'm trained in NLP and neuro-linguistic programming. So it's brain science and how we bridge communication gaps and how we have different communication modalities and how do we, you know, cut down on the miscommunication and really connect on a deeper level, because you are like the people that you're talking with. So it's, you know, a combination of psychology and brain science and communication and confidence and all of that bundled into me. That's what I teach. I mean, that's my jam, and it's all about storytelling.
This episode is made possible with support from Avail. In a world where precision meets creativity, where every line drawn holds the power to innovate, people like you are shaping the future. But let's face it, in the realm of design, the unknown is your least favorite companion. You've been stranded on the island of inefficient software, lost in the fog of endless searching for the right content. It's time to embark on a new journey, a journey to clarity, efficiency, and design excellence. It's time to get off that island and away from the unknown. Introducing Avail, the beacon in your design odyssey. Say goodbye to the daunting 10 to 20 minutes wasted per search, the costly interruptions in your creative flow. With Avail, your team will zip through content discovery, focusing more on designing and less on searching. Imagine a world where you can stop constantly fighting the costly fires caused by pulling content from past projects, building from scratch, or relying on personal libraries. Avail isn't just a tool, it's a revolution for AECO firms. Organize, manage, and navigate your project information with a leader that's proven in reliability, relatability, and success. Join the ranks of the top AECO firms who've already chosen Avail. In just 30 days, you could deploy Avail and witness a dramatic reduction in costly design errors. Whether it's your first CMS or you're considering a switch, there's someone you should meet. Will Rouse, your guide to all things Avail. Schedule an appointment and explore Avail's capabilities, onboarding programs, and professional services. Don't let your designs be clouded by inefficiency. Clear skies are just a click away. Go to getavail.com/stranded and book a meeting with Will to start your Avail journey today. Avail, where your best design is just a search away. My thanks to Avail for supporting this episode of the Troxel Podcast. And now let's get back to the conversation.
I'm really curious to get your take on this, because I've seen it work both ways. I've been on the receiving side of coaching when it comes to going after a project where it was a really important project. And so it was deemed very important to have the team firing on all cylinders, very prepared ahead of time. Who's going to say what, when they're going to say it, how they're going to say it, what are they doing with their hands when they say it? How much is memorized? How much is just off the cuff? And it's pretty overwhelming, I think, for most of the people on the team to go through a process like that. And at the same time, it's really useful, but it's not necessarily natural for those people. And so then the other side of that is I don't want to prepare. And I think we're talking more about the confident people who have done this a lot, who have the experience, who just say, like, do not force me to prepare. It will only screw up who I actually am and how that interaction is going to go, because they are confident in being able to navigate the situation in real time.
Right.
And we see people scoff at both of those. We see people scoff at the people who say, there's no way I'm preparing. And then you've brought up the word a couple times already today of preparedness, right? And knowing who you are and knowing the situation. So I'm just curious what your take is on all that, because we've seen it all. And I think it probably depends on personality type and the people involved. But if just kind of talking about those two different sides of this teeter-totter here, the people who are saying, no way, don't make me prepare. I'll actually do worse if you make me prepare. I'm better in the moment. And then there's the people who are saying, prepare until you just know this like the back of your hand. And we're going to go in and hit all these talking points.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to narrowing that gap, because when people are prepared, they might be prepared, but they're not, they don't really know the depth of the people that they're interacting with. So I say that it's either a hot mess. If your BD meeting is a hot mess or went off the rails and the car ride back to the office is, hellish. And do you want a beautifully choreographed, graceful dance? Doesn't that feel so much better, where it's not rehearsed to the point where it seems and feels rehearsed and stuffy and, I can't express myself. I can't, we have
robotic
to think on our feet, but we also have to know the other people, our colleagues and the people on the team, the sellers and the doers, of how are they going to interact? Who's going to answer certain questions? Not every question, because you can't plan all that. I mean, that's right. A natural flow of a conversation. So you want to be able to be, like I say, trained to think on your feet and to be sharp and to pick up on these little nuances. I always say, notice the nuances. And then, if you have the leader of your team, for instance, the head of the BD, presentation, and the others on the team are able to keep an eye on them and look for those verbal and nonverbal cues and clues, like something very subtle that nobody else would notice, but, don't say anything, let it land. Or, I've got this, Kyle's going to jump in a moment. But first, I just want to mention that the survey shows that bang, bang, bang.
Mm-hmm.
So we're feeding off one another instead of, stepping on each other's words and interrupting and not knowing what to say. And this person was supposed to say that, and that was supposed to say, it doesn't work that way. Like I say, it can be a beautifully choreographed dance when you trust yourself and you trust the others as you prepare for the presentation, not on the way to the meeting, but, a day or two before. That's right, Coach. And there's so many things and little details that make such a huge difference. And it's not overwhelming. It just becomes, this is the way we do it. It's a checklist almost.
There's so many people on, my experience, I guess I should back up a little bit before I get into this, is in a larger firm context. And there are a lot of people doing really specific roles, and it's pretty well delineated. And then there's smaller firms where you do it all, right? And so these are very different things. Now, what you just said makes me think of is that there are people who do BD. Like, that's what they do. And they are very good at it. They're the rainmakers, as they say, in the office, right? And to your point, like, they're good. They have skills in that, because they don't have to do everything. They don't have to do payroll, and they don't have to do design, and they don't have to do project architecting, and they don't have to do detailing and all those things. And then there's, the 1 to 10 person firms where you do a lot more. You have to cover a lot more of the roles and responsibilities of an office. And I'm just wondering how you cultivate those skills in those kinds of scenarios where it's not your full-time role to do that exactly. What do you give people advice in doing to start to cultivate those kinds of skills?
Well, it's interesting, because everybody today is in marketing. and nobody signed up for it in AEC, right?
Yeah, so what do you mean by that? I read something about that with you, and I think that I agree. Like I said, my job is communications. I didn't sign up to be a communicator. I was a designer. Like that's what I did. And then I found out the psychology aspect of it. And I found out the selling aspect of it. And I found out the listening aspect of it. So I'm really curious what you mean when you say everybody's in marketing. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's that the doers, the sellers are the ones who are, you know, they go into the meetings and schmooze and they're friendly and they're you know, likable and they know how to close the deal. And of course, now we have the doers who are being required, who didn't want to go to, you know, they're not marketers. They're not outgoing probably or friendly or know the sales and all of that and the soft skills. And so they're being forced into these conference rooms and these presentations, kicking and screaming. And it's like, well, wait a minute. If we don't train them and show them how to do it, to reinvent themselves, I mean, that's what I had to do. I had worked in radio, okay? If somebody would have told me 24 years ago that I'd be doing this, I would have laughed in their face, okay? I'm like, I'd rather sit home in a closet by myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know gestures. I don't know facial expression. Everything was the voice, the words. And so I had, you know, now I keynote speeches, you know, at built conferences and for construction and at the steel conferences. And it's my sisters are like, what? Can you imagine I was a quiet one?
Is this the same crazy Susan we grew up with? It's not the same Susan. Yeah.
No, it's not. Yeah. All of a sudden I found my words and a lot of them. So it really is about that. You can reinvent yourself. But you have to know how, and you have to be willing. You have to want to say, you know what? I want to do better. I want to, and all the AEC folks I talk to, they want to have a bigger impact. They want to make a difference in their communities. They want to feel that trust and that sense of belonging. And this is the foundational part of it. This is the foundation, is that I have discovered superior leaders have two qualities, two traits. They are confident and they are excellent communicators. And these are things that people can learn. You can be proficient in technology like you are with, you know, BIM and modeling and PIM and Lean and everything like that and Revit. But the key here is that if you're not proficient and with people and how to interact and have those soft skills and those easy conversations, it doesn't matter what you know if you can't communicate and articulate it to somebody else.
Yeah, I really resonate with that. Even thinking about the purpose of the technology is to document communication and to communicate for a step that's coming in the future, right? Whether it's building, occupying, how do we synthesize ideas into a real physical building in the end? And it's through this kind of documentation and technical process, but it is still about communication. Like that's the real underlying purpose of it all. And I think that that's really interesting when you talk about leadership, because again, like going back in my own experience, and maybe this is a Gen X thing even. I don't know. Like, I don't know. For some reason, that just popped into my head right now is I've always seen myself as kind of the bridge, right, between the millennials and the boomers, right? And my job is to translate both directions because that's where I am and that's my generation. We are the bridge builders between these generations. And they also call us like the forgotten generation, right? Because it's like we have the leaders who are in my instance, it was always the boomers, right, who were the leaders in firms because they were the seniority. They'd been there the longest and built like they don't speak the same language. And so my job very much became communicating and building consensus in the office and outside of the office. And I found the inside the office part to be the most, I don't know, unexpected. I didn't think I was going to have to do that, right? But the psychology, the politics, there's the timelines, the deadlines, all of these things that we have to navigate together and get people on the same page and build consensus around are the communication that has to happen there and the nuance and the understanding of it all. I think just being in that environment really does kind of, that is our boot camp for going outside of the office. It's actually not that different outside of the office than it is inside the office, but I think people still see those two things very differently.
Yeah, I think that when we talk about, you know, the documentation and the you know, information management, especially in AEC, is that what about the human factor? We have to communicate with human beings. And what, no matter what generation you're in, I mean, the folks who are of the, you know, the emerging leaders today, and because of, you know, COVID and because of technology, for whatever reason or whatever excuse or whatever you want to say or believe, doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that you have to be able to pick up the phone. You can't communicate with memes and TikTok and you know, that's where they, and, you know, it's a good thing, it's a bad thing, but that's where they are. And so we, as the older generation, the boomers here, speaking for myself, is that we have to work with them and train them and show them. I mean, I just did a webinar recently. I'll give you this example of emerging leaders in construction and real estate. There were 25 people on this program, and they all sent me the pre-homework that said, I have no idea where I'm supposed to network, who my ideal clients are, what their concerns are, how am I supposed to follow up? They've been there for 2 years and they're asking me who their ideal client is. I'm like, shame on you. Not shame on you, shame on your boss. Shame on the leadership for not providing the training and the information. And the, I mean, it's studies show time and time again that these, you know, the Gen X, Gen Y, the millennial, they want to learn. Those are one of the things that attract them to, you know, companies and careers. They want career growth. And so when we look at AEC at the turnover and the talent acquisition, you provide this for them and they'll stick around. They just don't know it. They didn't learn it in engineering school. And their leaders didn't learn it in engineering school because it's not taught there. So it's available, but you have to make time for it and make the commitment to it. You know, saying, I don't know it. And I did a training back in 2015. Well, a lot's changed since 2015. You know, it's like the dinosaur age. So are you keeping up with it? And are you setting the pace and the example for emerging leaders who are going to eventually step into the next level and become the management and move up the scale? How do they communicate? How do they get along with others? Are their noses buried in the phone, or can they pick up the phone and actually, you know, use it to call somebody and you know, untwist a miscommunication or a message that would take 17 threads on an email, but resolve it in 12 seconds on the phone? Because you can ask a question, you get to hear somebody's voice, you interact with them. That's the deep relationship and connection that we talked about a few minutes ago.
Can we go back a little bit and talk about a definition, and maybe you can lay this out in more detail? You said seller doer, and I think that is very much a marketing term. We hear it inside of offices a lot as a model that is more appropriate potentially than other models. So maybe you can lay out kind of the landscape of what that means, and then what are the alternatives and why seller doer is important.
Well, I mean, you know, in AEC, that's what it is. As I mentioned earlier, that the sellers are the marketing people, the schmoozers who are, you know, friendly, outgoing, the who know sales, how to close the deal, how to network effectively, how to ask the right questions. And this, you know, what I teach is about, you know, it's not about emotional intelligence. It's not about Toastmasters. It's not about active listening. It's a higher level of communication. And so those are the sellers, and the doers are the people who are out on the construction site, you know, the superintendents, the PMs, the estimators. And so there's that gap that they don't jive together. You know, they don't speak the same language. They don't, they just don't function. And a lot of it is the, you know, AEC is left brain. It's logical. It's scientific. It's numbers. It's analytical. And, you know, it is creative, of course, as you come from architecture, that, you know, there is, you know, the right side of the brain is the, you know, creative and all that. But we really look for the emotional part. And that's what sales is all about. And that's how we're able to connect emotionally with people when we have that human factor, H2H, human to human. You know, we talk a lot in business about storytelling. And people were like, well, how do you use a story in business? How do I introduce myself? How do I tell my story? Like when we opened up, talked about, you know, not speaking until I was 4 years old. Well, it's all about the story and how do you deliver it? But you have to believe that you have a story. So what is the place for that? And how is it relevant to your client or prospect in a meeting that's not self-serving, that you feel comfortable sharing so you have the right words in the right order at the right time for the right people? That's human-to-human communication, because storytelling is not going out of style anytime soon. It's been around for 2,000 years. You know, it's hieroglyphics on the cave with the cavemen and the fireside chats with President Roosevelt in the 40s during World War II. People were sitting by the radio. That's all they had. And now, you know, with social. So communication is not going out of style anytime soon.
Yeah.
So the key is are you going to commit to learning it, or are you going to sit and complain and say, wow, somebody else won the bid? Why? Because you copied and pasted your crap from last year.
I find it really interesting. Something I just heard and it resonated with me was that you have about 6 minutes when you're giving a presentation before you will start to just lose people. They'll start falling off rapidly at that point. It's kind of related to attention span, although I think attention spans are potentially way, way, way shorter than that. But in a new scenario, right? I'm going to this presentation. I'm going to this meeting. You definitely have somebody's attention for the first 6 minutes is the number that I was given. And I think that that's really important to put out there, because you talked about copying and pasting the same crap as last year in your presentation. And you also mentioned earlier on slides with just loads of information, right? When I think about a building product manufacturer coming into the office and giving a presentation on their process or their product or whatever it is, and it's just loaded with data. And I can do one of two things. I can listen to you or I can read the slide. And I tend to look at a screen if it's on, right? Like that's just I think that's a lot of people's. If there's a screen on in a bar that's playing a game, even if you don't like sports, you're kind of watching the game because you're just drawn to it. It's like you're drawn to watch the fire in the fireplace, right? It's like this flickering light. It's in our DNA to look at that kind of a thing. And if you don't engage with those people in the first 6 minutes, if you don't get an interaction to happen, like they're gone, they're checking their email. How many times have you checked your phone during this meeting, right? It's like, it happens all the time with people. I'm curious what you have seen in that regard, because we go into these scenarios where we have to present and we have to tick all these boxes off and we have to get from here to there and we have to keep it moving and we're trying to keep people's attention. And at the same time, we're not engaging with them. We're just spewing rote communication. It's the same crap that we presented the last time, for example, right? So what do you think about all that and that number even? I mean, maybe it's even less. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, the number is you know, 6 minutes is scary to me. We've got to get them. Humans, according to research, have the attention span of a goldfish, which is 8.5 seconds. So there's that. And we also have to understand and learn, how do adults learn? So when you have that, you know, and this is what I coach. I'm giving away a lot of gems here. Okay. People are, you know, taking notes or what have you. But it really comes down to the, you know, and we've done this in trainings where they'll show us a slide deck that they used. The architecture firm, specifically what I'm thinking of. And it opens up with, you know, their team and their history. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And that's where my radio, people say, well, why would we hire a radio, you know, a broadcaster and somebody who, you know, has this interesting background, but what do you know about our industry? I'll tell you what I know is that if you don't grab their attention, just like the news story at the beginning, they're going to click somewhere else. They're going to check out. Like you said, they're going to check their phone. They're going to be distracted. How do you use your words to paint the picture and to keep them engaged, which means they're thinking, they're feeling, they're reacting, and they're involved, so that you're mesmerizing, that they are hanging on the edge of their seats? Of course they're going to pay attention. You've got them. Every word that's dripping off your tongue is magic. Okay, so
you got me interested with all those words right there. I find this is even more difficult in this. We're doing this remotely right now, right? You're on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast. I'm looking at you through a screen. We're not in the same room together. There is a body language barrier. I'm only seeing a part of you, right? You're only seeing a part of me. And I'm curious how you coach people through that, because we live in a hybrid world now also, right? And how do you engage with people through this method of communication when you can't be in the same room as them? We've seen firms' borders expand. Where are they competing for work, right? And a lot of times this digital communication comes in as well. So I'm wondering where you go with that.
Yeah, you know, there's a whole different psychology and set for, you know, Zoom overload and that disconnection, you know, that disconnect that we had because of COVID and because of the way technology is now, that, you know, people do need to learn how to use their body language. And, you know, it's like doing a speech in public, you know, at a conference or a meeting, and people hide behind the podium. And so you're just a talking head. But right. In the end, you are the message. So when you're able to, as I said, I've worked in radio. I didn't need to use gestures and all of this. And then I had to learn, okay, how do I use my body, like, you know, improv, right? Sneaking around the corner and I jumped out from the tree and all of a sudden, you know, all of that. So it feels awkward or uncomfortable, but we want to be able to connect and understand how people communicate online when you only have. So, you know, when I'm speaking in live, you know, at an event, is that I never stand behind a podium. Never. And I teach people, because you're hiding, because you don't trust yourself. You are the message, everything, the way you look, the way you show up, the way you move, the way you use your voice, the way you behave. So even though it's here, you still have some personality back here in the background, and it's looking at the camera and not worrying, oh, is my hair okay over here? Did something fall over there? Am I distracted? It's about really being, like I say, centered and wherever my feet are, my head is, and not being distracted. But it is a whole different animal, for sure.
The digital version of hiding behind the podium is hiding behind the slideshow. Sharing your screen is, you are minimized. The content is the focus at that point. And I find that to be the biggest crutch that people will also use, right? It's, I get to hide behind and read the slides. And nobody wants to sit on the other end and receive that. They want to be engaged with. They want it. They want it so badly to be part of the conversation and interacting and engaging. And you have put up a barrier. You have put the podium between you and them when you do that. When you click, I'm going to share my screen now. And then there's this awkward fumbling of actually sharing the screen, right? And I've done a ton of work, doesn't get exposed on this podcast because this is a mostly audio podcast and we're mostly just talking, but I can draw on my screen. I can communicate with you as an architect. Let me turn that up so that my face isn't covered up. But I can communicate as an architect with something that a skill that I have that you probably don't have, right? Is just live sketching as an example. To engage with people, to communicate ideas, that is, it's fun. It's people love to watch other people sketch. They just do, because they probably can't sketch, right? I mean, it's just one of those things that is interesting because it's something that I don't know how to do and they do. But there's ways to control the communication digitally where I can pop up another computer over me, but then I could bring it right back so that we're talking. And we're not looking at that thing while I hide in the corner, right? And so I think there's a lot of aspects when it comes to digital communication that we need to be thinking more like broadcasters. We need to be thinking more like newscasters. Like you said earlier, everybody's in marketing. I think everybody's in communications as well, right? Everybody's a media business as well as a marketing business.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that we all have the platform. And that's where, you know, when social really took off with Facebook and, you know, at the beginning, was that all of a sudden, everyone had an opinion.
Yeah.
You know, I remember my dad, like, you know, growing up in the 70s, and my dad's so mild-mannered and easygoing. But he would, you know, watch the, again, we were really into the news. So we watched the TV news, and every once in a while he'd yell back at Peter Jennings or, you know, Dan Rather. And he was, but it was a one-way conversation. It was very stilted. Now, right. If you don't like that Hertz kept you waiting for your rental car in Florida,
you're gonna tweet
you can just
about
go
it
on
whatever.
Your phone and say Hertz yeah. sucks or whoever, right. you know, or Hertz was mm-hmm. great. You know, they got me my car fixed right away. So mm-hmm. you have an opinion. And so now everyone's saying what they think. So everyone is in media. Everyone's got the same platform. You can go online and reach 9 million people with something that goes viral. And I'll share this quick story with you. This is just came to my mind. And again, this is the nuance of how a conversation flows, why we don't have talking points today, is that you remember the story, The Miracle on the Hudson, where the American Airlines, Captain Sully,
yes.
his plane crashed on the Hudson, right? 155 right. people in New York in the harbor on the wing of the plane in January. Well, I interviewed the gentleman who took the picture that went viral. So this was about 15 years ago, I believe that happened. And so the person who took the picture, I interviewed him for my blog. His name is Yanis Krooms. And what happened was he was on a ferry between New York and New Jersey going to a business meeting. And news always breaks first on Twitter because it's the fastest. And that's where a lot of yeah. reporters and journalists hang out. So there's people on the boat and they're watching this, you know, plane land on the Hudson River, and people are, so they're, you know, the now the ferry that Yanis is on is going to help people. And so people are starting to take pictures, but remember, phones were very different back then. So he says, well, if they're taking pictures, I guess I should take some pictures too. So he goes over to the railing and takes some pictures. The only difference between him and the other passengers on the ferry with him was that he tweeted to his 200 followers, because yeah. he knew how to use the technology. Wow, look at this. I'm on a ferry in the Hudson River, and this just happened. Reporters couldn't get there. They're in the middle of the water. All of a sudden, citizen journalism is born, because people depended, because he had the platform and he knew how to use it. The others right. didn't know how to use it. So the 200 followers he had on Twitter said, holy crap, look at this. And they tweeted it and it went viral. And of course, you know, that's the story. So how do you use technology? How do you know what to do, when to do it, and how it's going to affect other people? We all have the platform. We can all learn. We can all learn this communication. We can learn how to use Zoom. We can learn how to sketch. We can learn how to do podcast interviews. We can learn how to do, you know, better jobs at being more effective communicators in BD meetings. You can learn how to change your oil on a YouTube video, or install a dishwasher, or tie a tie.
Absolutely everything. Yes.
That's it. Yeah.
This episode is made possible with support from Confluence. Picture this. October 2019, Lexington, Kentucky, the birthplace of Confluence, a place where tech leaders, AEC product developers, and practitioners came together for three transformative days. It was more than a conference. It was a confluence of ideas, discussions, and unforgettable social experiences. Since then, over 200 attendees have experienced the magic of Confluence. I've had the privilege of being part of three of these remarkable gatherings, two in Kentucky and one in Orange County, each one a melting pot of learning, collaboration, and camaraderie around a topic shaping our industry. And now we're thrilled to announce the next regional Confluence event, in April 2024, in the vibrant heart of New York City. This time, we dive deep into the realms of AI and machine learning, unraveling their mysteries and potentials in our industry. Are you interested in being part of this exciting journey? To continue the conversation? To shape the future? Visit the link in the show notes for more details. Confluence, where ideas flow, connections form, and the future of AEC technology is shaped, one conversation at a time. My thanks to Confluence for supporting this episode of the Troxel Podcast. And now, let's get back to the conversation.
I think it's also important to say that you need to learn how to use it before you actually need to use it, right? Because if he didn't have 200 followers, zero people would have seen that image and it would not have gone viral. And so a lot of times we see AEC late to adopt things because there are a lot of people who are saying, maybe not in this audience, who would say, I guess, to what you just said, well, of course, I could just throw that picture on Twitter myself, too. not if you don't have any followers. It doesn't matter if you don't have any followers, right? And so you actually have to be doing the thing before you need to be doing the thing, right? Because if you don't, no one will see it. No one will get it. Like for me to interview you today, I had to do 150 episodes of a podcast, right? Like that's just the number that it happened to be for this to work, right? It can't be like, this is my first podcast. I can't just sit down with you and record my Zoom meeting. It could have been, but it wouldn't be what it is if I hadn't been practicing this for the last 12 years in my case, right? I've been podcasting for that long. This podcast hasn't been going for that long. Like I haven't only done 120 episodes of Troxel in 12 years, but my other podcast, Arcaspeak, I did another one called Peopleverse. I have another one called Confluence, Troxel. And all of that cumulative effort and commitment to show up and to publish and to do all the things that go along with that make this a thing that people pay attention to. And you can't just show up one day and expect people to pay attention to it. And something that you said earlier, I think really rings true with me. I also saw, I think it was a YouTube short in this instance of Casey Neistat saying, nobody cares about you. Nobody. And this is Casey Neistat. I mean, how many, 12 million followers maybe on YouTube? Something like that. Nobody cares about you. And I think that that is a something that you have to continue to bring to everything that you do and say, like, how do I get it so that people do care about it when I publish an episode? How do I get to the point? Because it's not, this is the overnight success that took 10 years in the making, right? That's how these things often go. And so when you're talking about journalism, when you're talking about broadcasting and interviewing and asking good questions, that only happens by doing it and doing it and doing it and refining it and getting better at it. And having that control over your brain to say, oh, I'm starting to get distracted. How do I pull myself back into this conversation? Right. So because you're the one maybe leading it. And so I don't know. I'm kind of rambling at this point but I do feel like all of this stuff is part of the soup that makes a successful communications platform. Like I was saying earlier, we're all a media platform. Some of us are choosing to be that, right? Some of us, even though we may not feel like it, we are or we could be.
Yeah, I think people some people are hiding behind it, and other people are, you know, all over it to the, you know, ad nauseum where it's like, I can't follow this person anymore. But sure. I really love, you know, I wanted to go back to what you mentioned, Evan, about, you know, how are people, you know, really communicating with one another so that when you have, you know, when you're talking about yourself and it's self-serving, it's like, no, I always say I'm from Brooklyn. I know a lot of four-letter words, and one of them is flip. Flip your communication. It's not about you. Nobody cares about you. It's always about them. So it's about BS. Be the solution. Be relevant. Be the solution.
Getting some new vocabulary today.
It's speaking in sound bites, punchy, short, easy to understand, that memorable. But talk about them. And again, it comes back to being in a busy newsroom, chaotic. During morning drive in the most competitive media market in the country, like you said, you don't get this way overnight. I didn't cut my teeth at some, you know, Iowa, you know, farm station. I was in New York, New Jersey, and Philly, the most competitive market. And so when people would call and pitch us stories, you know, I'd answer the phone, you know, you bark news, you know, East Coast thing, and they'd start telling me about a story. And I'm thinking, who cares? Who cares? Why should I cover your story? Why should I pay attention to this? And that's exactly what happens in those BD meetings.
Yeah.
Who cares? Why are you telling me about the 50-year-old history of your company with the person who works in the accounting office? I don't care. Fix my problem. Now I'll pay attention. That's the difference. That's the clincher. When you are relevant and you have higher level conversations, you'll get return calls and emails from the decision makers. People say, I didn't know what to do. They didn't answer me. They didn't tell me why we didn't get the bid. That's your job, why you didn't get the bid. Don't ask them for 3 months if they're scratching your head saying, oh, I wonder why we didn't get the bid, and keep emailing people. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. You have to be the solution. You have to be relevant. You have to step up and refine your skills so that people will notice you and pay attention. It's not the other way around.
It's kind of the art of the headline, right? The art of the clickbait headline. Some of my favorite people are copywriters because they have it, they just come at it differently. And I think oftentimes I appreciate a copywriter, and I'm kind of using that title generically, I guess, right now, because I'm actually thinking of specific individuals who call themselves that. If they're helping me come up with a title for something or an outline for something, or maybe even just a communication about something that I've already done, they're coming at it from a very different angle than I would have, because I'm very in the weeds and I'm very much like, well, it's this and this and this. And they're like, no, it's this. And they flip it. Like you just said, they flip it, right? And they come up with something catchy and interesting that I could never have come up with. And I'm wondering from a collaborative standpoint, right? When we're talking about these people who are going out and doing BD and the teams that they have behind them and marketing, and how important is that? I mean, or how do you get to be like that yourself? I think like for me, it would be, I would watch a lot of comedy potentially, right? To get ideas. I would watch a lot of news. I would pay attention to the way people write headlines. I would look on YouTube. How do people design thumbnails? What do they title their videos? What kinds of images do they put in there? Because those are the kinds of things that are, I mean, obviously, like the feedback is right there. How many likes, how many shares do these things have? And a lot of times it has to do with what is in that first 6 seconds, or what is the thumbnail look like, or what is the title of the video, or whatever. I'm interesting from your standpoint. If I don't have those skills myself, who do I look at for inspiration? How important is that?
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly what I coach and teach on, because the only piece of content that's guaranteed to be read is the headline or the subject line of an email. So if you see, you know, a magazine cover in the supermarket checkout lane, and it's a 7 ways, you know, to healthy cooking, and you're really into that, you're going to keep reading the article. You want to open it up, or, you know, you're sitting in the chair clicking away and you see somebody, oh, wow, they have a healthy cooking show. I want to see that. Or you're going to click. That's it. So how are you going to get people to pay attention? You're going to be relevant to them in those first magical few words. So that's where the editing and the writing comes in, where people say to me, how do you know what to include and what to leave out? And I say, cut the crap. Get rid of the irrelevant words, the empty words. Longer doesn't mean better. It just means it's longer. Right. And, you know, TLDR, right. Too long didn't read.
Right.
Nobody's got the attention span. Nobody's got the interest to try to figure out what you're trying to say. So it goes back to what you mentioned, to what I said at the beginning. What else, what else, what else? What else is this story about? What else is this firm about? Are you paying attention to the twists, turns, and trends in the industry from the morning that you went into the meeting so that you know exactly what's happening? Not that you went on their website or their blog or checked their LinkedIn 3 days ago or a week ago and you didn't know that X happened? Well, then shame on you. You had time to watch The Bachelor. Yeah, time to check your email 40 times or go on Facebook, whatever you're going to do, right? The goal here, I mean, no nonsense stuff here, to be a person of excellence. People will notice that. Those decision makers are going to be impressed. They're going to stop and say, wow, this person's sharp. This is who I want to work with. These are the people that are got going on here. Otherwise, you blend into the crowd. How are you going to differentiate yourself and stand out? You be a person of excellence. And you're relevant. You're the solution. BS. Be the solution. Help them solve their problems and they will come to you time and time again.
I really appreciate that. And I have two stories from one client that I would share to kind of confirm what you just said, which was, number one was, it was a very small interview. It was me, a project manager from our side. I was the designer. He was the project manager. We would be the ones delivering the project, and two people on the client side. And I think, I'm just guessing here, I guess I would have to ask, but what clinched it in the meeting for us to get the project was when I asked them, what else? It was that. It was, I've looked at your website. I see what you're about. but I know this isn't the whole story. Tell me what's not on the website. Tell me about you, all the things that are not on the website. And they went into this whole story about sustainability. They're a transportation company, how they're transforming their bus line into electric vehicles. They have a local, like the first in the region in the LA area of this outdoor bus recharging station. None of that was on their website, probably just yet. It just wasn't there yet, right? But it was one of those things where I showed an interest in who they were. I asked about them. And it wasn't even them personally. It was them, the organization. And it was the things that, you know, nobody can make their website update fast enough, right? For all the cool stories that are out there. And I, therefore, how would I know, right? So all I had to do was say, what is not represented on your website that I should know about you? So anyway, we got the project. That was story number one. The second part was, I was at a board meeting where we had supplied several design options, which what architects do, right? We have to give at least three options. That's the magic number for some reason. And we had these different options that built on those stories that he told me during the initial interview. And it was a very simple project. It was a facade replacement where a certain piece of the building was aged out and the structure behind it was rusting and whatever. And these pieces were going to fall off and hurt somebody. And so they thought, well, we're just going to put something back up there that looks just like what we're taking off. And based on what they had told me, I went in with design ideas that were like about what they were about. And these things showed sustainability and transportation. And it really brought kind of the fundamentals of their organization to the facade of the building. And it was a thing they could point at and tell people a story about, right? And one of the board members said, I appreciate the architects so much in this that we chose them because they said, what if? They were the ones brave enough to come to us and say, what if it was something more? What if it could be something else? And they said, we would have never done that ourselves. Yeah. And so they hired us because we were the ones saying, what if? And architects are amazing at that, right? Like that. Like true architecture is really about finding solutions that mere mortals cannot think of themselves, right? And to me, I think those are two kind of, they confirm what you're talking about, where it was that feedback that I got in the moment that now makes that such a memorable project. Otherwise, it could have just been a very like rudimentary, yep, we could have put the same thing up that they took down and yep, it paid the bills and we did the thing and moved on to the next one. Or it can be a story that I'm telling today that happened 15 years ago because it was so impactful because I asked the open-ended questions. What else is not a yes or no answer?
Exactly. Right? It's not how or why, you know, mm-hmm. or what. Those are dead-ended questions, you know. We want to get information, like we talked about earlier, quality questions. And so having that, you know, attention to detail. And knowing that you want to stand out and saying, you know, what else, what else, what else? And then going in there confident and strong and believing that this is the right story for them and knowing how to craft it and structure it. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like we're wrapping up here and I want to make sure that everybody can find you online. I will put links to what you're about to say in the show notes so people don't have to remember them. They can just go to the show notes and click those links. But Susan, I mean, and also if I'm missing anything here, if there's anything else that you wanted to put out there, I'm not trying to cut us off, but I feel like we brought it back to the beginning, right? When going back to you did it, you tie the bow around the what else and tie the end to the beginning. So what are we missing? So if we're not missing anything, I would love to hear just where people can contact you, connect with you, find you online.
Yeah, I think that the key here is that when AEC Tech is talking about technology and all the file documentation and the file management and the
how
renderings and all that,
yep.
It's not the process. We need to focus on the people because the process, who's behind the process? It's a human being. And so that's the missing link from all the dashboards and everything else is the soft skills. And that's where people are saying, we don't know what to do. But for 10 years, you've been saying that. It's like the illusion of confusion. And I've been called out on that too by one of my coaches. It's like you do know where to start, but you have to start. And so, yeah, you have projects that need to get out the door. And you also need to train people, these emerging leaders, to be able to step up to the next level. So that's the coaching and the programs, the online keynotes and the speeches and trainings that I do. It's all at aecamplify.com. And I'm on LinkedIn, bopping around there. We do a newsletter 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And would welcome, conversations. Just love talking to people. And I'm curious. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I'll go back to where we began as well. And this is a very important subject to me, at least. I mean, people can decide for themselves whether they think it's important or not. But I do believe that the data is there if you want to look at the data. And just to reinforce your point, I think a lot of times clients don't care how you do the thing. They just want the thing, right? They don't care about the tools is what I mean by that. They do want a good relationship. They do want to care about something. And that care happens through this emotional connection and relationship with the actual people who do the job, who are actually listening to them and turning that thing that was just an idea into reality. And that is the magic of what we can do in architecture, right? And to take them through that process and include them in it so that it's participatory and they're contributing and they really feel ownership over it. Because when the project is delivered, and I think this even goes back to the stories I just told about the facade replacement project, is the stories live on. The people who come to visit that place tell the stories that we went through to get there, right? And that to me is extremely satisfying because I know that those ideas are in good hands, right? Those they want to tell people about those stories because it builds a connection between them as well. Like now they know some insider information that nobody else knows because it's not on a plaque. It's not on a billboard. It's not in a video. It's not on a podcast, right? It's impossible to find. You actually have to talk to somebody to get that information. And I think that that is also what kind of adds to how important it is to figure out the ways to build the skills, to become the communicators, to land the ideas so that you can tell these kinds of stories about your work, which then people will say, I want a story like that. I want to be part of a story like that. So I'm going to choose them to help me make that happen, right? Because are you going to get a building? Are you going to get architecture? Are you going to get an experience, right? They're not the same things. They're the same things. Right. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this today. And again, cover this very important topic, at least to me and to you, I think. So this has been a fun conversation. Thank you.
Yeah. So enjoyed our time together. Thank you, Evan.
Thanks to our sponsors and thanks to our members this week. Find out how you can become a member at trxl.co. And I'll talk to you again next week.